Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 13, The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, Text Number 2. Priste Brahmyad Amanda Mandara Giri Kiravagra Kandhu Yanam.
Priste Brahmyad Amanda
Mandara Giri Kiravagra Kandhu Yanam. Nidra Bhagavata Sasanila Pantuvaha. Samskara kalannu vartana vasadvirat nivennam vasam. Yatayitam matanditam jala nidhe nadyapi visham yiti. Priste, upon his back, Brahmyat, rotating, Amanda, most heavy, Mandaragiri, of Mandara Mountain, Grava Agra, by the edges of the stones, Kandu Yanat, by the scratching. Nidalo, who became sleepy. Kamata Akrite, in the form of a tortoise. And Bhagavata, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Swasa, coming from the breathing. Anila, the winds, Pantu, may they protect. Vaha, all of you, Yat, of which, Samskara, of the remnants, Kala, the traces, Anuvatana Vasat, as the effect of following. Vila Nibinha, by that which resembles the flow. Ambasam, of the water. Yata Ayatam, becoming and going. Atanditam, ceaseless. Jala Nidhe, of the ocean. Na, does not. Adya api, even today. Vijamyati, stop. Translation. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as Lord Korma, a tortoise, his back was scratched by the sharp-edged stones lying on massive, whirling Mount Mandara. And this scratching made the Lord sleepy. May you all be protected by the winds caused by the Lord's breathing in this sleepy condition. Ever since that time, even up to the present day, the ocean tides have imitated the Lord's inhalation and exhalation by piously coming in and out. Purport. At times, we alleviate an itching sensation by blowing upon it. Similarly, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can alleviate the itching sensation within the minds of mental speculators, as well as the itching of the material senses of conditioned souls engaged in sense gratification. Thus, by meditating on the windy breath of Lord Korma, the tortoise incarnation, all categories of conditioned souls can be relieved of the deficiencies of material existence and come to the liberated spiritual platform. One must simply allow the pastimes of Lord Korma to blow within one's heart like a favourable breeze, then one will surely find spiritual peace. So that explanation there, courtesy of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura. So this is the last of the chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 13, the last chapter of Canto 12. And in this chapter, Sudhir Goswami is glorifying the Srimad Bhagavatam, and of course its speaker, Sukadeva Goswami, and the topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the first verse, he has offered his obeisances to the Lord, who is worshipped as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan by various different levels of transcendental seekers. And here, he's offering a benediction to the hearers of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that may you all be protected by the winds caused by the Lord's breathing in this sleepy condition. So here describing Lord Korma. Generally, in the material world, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura describes, all the different categories of conditioned souls have various deficiencies. Either they have the itching of the material senses, who, you know, those conditioned souls are engaged in sense gratification, and then the itching sensation within the minds of the mental speculators. So these are the deficiencies. And because of these deficiencies, of course, people are not able to relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. The topics of Srimad Bhagavatam are described as rasa. They contain the transcendental sweetness, which is non-different from the Supreme Lord Himself. But people in this world, they cannot relish the Srimad Bhagavatam because they're either on a gross physical platform or on a subtle platform, they're disturbed in the mind and the senses. The physical senses are always disturbing, just as, you know, if one gets an itch, sometimes there is it's very, very difficult to concentrate on what you're doing. You may have, you know, people may have noticed that, especially if you're doing something where you really need to concentrate very, very hard, and both your hands are engaged, that for some inexplicable reason at that particular time, you might get an itching sensation, in the nose or somewhere. And, at the exact time, which is very, very difficult, you think, of all times that I've got this itching, you're trying to concentrate, and, your hands are occupied, and at that exact time, did anyone ever notice that? I mean, I get that sometimes. Especially in the deity room, sometimes I notice that if I'm, you know, if I'm worshipping the deity, it's like, because you're in the deity room, of course you're not supposed to touch your face, or, you know, you have to purify your hands if you even touch your face, or if you're cooking, you know, so cooking in the kitchen is another example. So at that exact time, you know, sometimes in the deity room I get this little itch. Just, it's almost, I sometimes think, you know, is Krishna blowing, you know, on my nose? You know, it's like a korma, you know, maybe there wouldn't be korma. But, you know, and you think, you know, it just gets to the point, you're like, you're trying to fan the Lord, and, you know, you've just got this itch. But, you know, at other times, it doesn't happen. You know? But there's certain times, you can't concentrate. It just makes it very difficult. You know, you're sort of trying to concentrate on fanning, or, you know, you're cooking or doing something. But that itching sensation is a, you know, huge distraction. So, here, it is describing that the deficiency of the materialist is that, you know, they have this itching sensation, that their senses are always disturbing like that, just like, and, you know, they feel that they have to, you know, as the senses are pushing for sense gratification, they feel that they have to alleviate that, otherwise they cannot, you know, go on with any other activity. So it makes it very hard for, you know, people to become devotees of the Lord, because, you know, the devotees of the Lord, they spend their time hearing about the pastimes of Krishna, serving Krishna, and they, you know, very, very careful not to waste even a second in, you know, just trying to, you know, satisfy the material senses or the material mind. But for a materialist, it's very hard for them to give up even 5 minutes of their day, because that, you know, trying to alleviate that sort of itching or that constant push of the material senses, it is such a distraction that it takes up the entirety of their whole life, and therefore actually they can't concentrate on their spiritual life for even 5 minutes. And similarly, you know, there are even those who are, you know, mental speculators. So their sense gratification is not so much trying to gratify the senses of the body, but their sense gratification is on a mental platform. Their sense gratification is on a mental platform, which means that they get a subtle pleasure in allowing their mind to go to all different places, you know, philosophically or through imagination, you know, through trying to, you know, understand things in their own particular way. So there's a certain amount of sense gratification. So much so that that is also a huge deficiency or a great problem when it comes to spiritual life. I remember before I was a devotee, I had a friend for many, many years, and we used to discuss in our intoxicated state, you know, the philosophy of life, and, you know, we'd examine life and the foolishness of people who didn't think about life very much but just sort of coasted along like sheep. You know, we were somewhat philosophical and somewhat intoxicated. We were following actually in the footsteps of the philosophers of you know, some of the ancient Roman cultures. You know, the philosophers that Western civilization is based upon. They had a, what they used to do was, the art was to drink as much intoxication as you can and still be able to talk philosophy. They had all sorts of different tricks. They used to drink in amethyst cups. You know, the amethyst is supposed to help to remove the intoxicating effect from what you're drinking. But a lot of the philosophy, in fact the very culture of Western society is based upon the philosophies that come out of those intoxicated philosophical discussions. So we were similar in that way. Anyway, by Krishna's grace, I came across the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And after reading those, I was a devotee just for a few months, not very long, and I thought, oh, I have to go and show my friends Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, I was thinking, he's just going to be overjoyed because, you know, all the things we used to talk about, trying to get answers, all the answers are there, just every page, everything you wanted to know. So I went to see this friend of mine and said, look, you know, you're going to love this book. And, you know, so we were intimate friends. We spent every single day together for, you know, 5 or 6 years or something. Very, very close friends. He said, no, I don't even want to look at it. I said, I couldn't understand. He said, I want to find out myself. But that's that pleasure of mental speculation. He didn't want to give that up. You know, that's the fact. There's a certain pleasure in mental speculation that, you know, I want to speculate upon it and just, you know, arrive at it myself. That's where my pleasure lies. I don't want the answer. I want the enjoyment of speculating and trying to come to the answer. You know, there's a certain enjoyment in that. So he wouldn't take the book. He wouldn't even look at it like that. I said, just leave it in your house, no? He wouldn't even do that. So here, you know, so it's a great impediment to one's spiritual life. So there's a benediction being offered here by Sudha Goswami. He's praying that may Korma, and he's describing that when the Mandara mountain was scratching his back as they were churning the milk ocean. That scratching sensation made him a little bit sleepy. It's like, you know, you do to little children sometimes, you know, you sort of rub their back and they fall asleep. May you all be protected by the winds caused by the Lord's breathing in his sleepy condition. So he was, you know, breathing in a very peaceful, restful condition, and you know, again, just like, you know, seeing a child sleeping, you know, there's no disturbance of the mind or the senses. As soon as they wake up, they're just all senses and the mind like this, but in that sleeping condition, very, very peaceful. So that breathing of the Lord Korma in that very peaceful condition, you know, may be protected by those winds. So it's interesting here that it describes that the ocean tides have actually imitated the Lord's inhalation and exhalation ever since that time, coming in and out. So there we're getting a relationship between the Lord's breathing, Lord Korma's breathing, and the oceans. The oceans, of course, are always associated with the mind. You know, if one has a disturbed mind, if they sit by the ocean, it is actually very, very, you know, calming, has a very calming effect for the mind. You know, one may take a walk along the beach or just sit there. The ocean has that effect. Without doing anything else, just being by the ocean, it can actually give great peace, or, you know, some large river or body of water. And also, astrologically, the various different planets, they have their presiding demigods. Now, generally, if in someone's astrological chart there is some planet which is causing them, due to a karmic debt, and that planet is causing them a lot of inauspiciousness and a lot of difficulty and a lot of suffering in their life, then the Vedas recommend that you worship the particular demigod for that planet. And you might also wear particular gems, and you may also wear a chant, you know, so there's different mantras to worship different demigods, and you may worship different gems and what have you like that. But the Vaishnavas, they also have Vaishnava deities for each of the planets. So for Saturn, generally the materialists will worship Shanidev, or you know, the residing deity of Saturn. And for the devotees, they actually worship Lord Korma. Korma is the presiding Vaishnava presiding deity that the devotees may worship in order to get alleviation from the afflictions of Saturn causing trouble. Now generally, if Saturn causes trouble in someone's chart, astrological chart, it's an indication that the person has a trouble maintaining discipline over the mind and senses. So a person who has a strong Saturn, well-placed Saturn, it means they have a karmic credit that they have the ability of self-discipline to control the mind and control the senses. And when Saturn is very weak or afflicted, it means that their sense of self-discipline is not functioning. So, you know, here we see, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam confirming a similar thing, that you know, by the blessings of Korma, one can actually, you know, get that self-discipline to tolerate the itching of the mind and the senses, and by tolerating that, it allows one then to relish the spiritual life. Which of course, as Sudha Goswami is describing, if one wants to come to the platform of spiritual life, he has to take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in essence, you know, he is giving the blessing that may Lord Korma help you to control your mind and senses so that you can come to the point where you can actually sit and hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the self-realized souls, like that. That is the blessing ultimately he is giving. As it says here, one must simply allow the pastimes of Lord Korma to blow within one's heart like a favorable breeze. Then one will surely find spiritual peace. Now again, you know, quite often, you know, one may ask the question, you know, why isn't he just offering a benediction of Krishna? You know, why mention Korma, who's, you know, an incarnation? Krishna is the full-fledged, you know, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why not give Krishna's blessing? Why not give Lord Chaitanya's blessing? Why give Korma's blessing? So actually we see that, you know, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we don't take up understanding the you know, people don't take shelter of Krishna as readily as they may take shelter of Lord Korma, because Krishna understanding is actually very rare. In the first part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami helps us to understand something of the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through these various incarnations, such as Korma and Rama and you know, Vamanadev and Nrsimhadev. And gradually, as one understands that the Supreme Lord is all powerful, then when one hears the human-like pastimes of Krishna, one can keep in mind that, oh, this is the Supreme Lord from whom all these incarnations are coming, and although he's performing human-like pastimes, he is all-powerful. So one who, you know, then one is inclined to take shelter of Krishna and take shelter of his blessings. Otherwise, one is not inclined to take shelter of Krishna and take his blessings, because one may think that he is an ordinary person, misunderstanding his pastimes.
If I do an astrological reading, I will actually recommend that devotees that they may take shelter of various deities of the Lord in order to help alleviate an affliction that may, you know, be apparent there within their karmic debts astrologically. And some people may be surprised, you know, why don't you just tell them to chant Hare Krishna? You know, why get someone to read the pastimes of Korma, or, you know, Vamana Dev or Lakshmi like this? And that is because, you know, sometimes people, if they're under the influence of some conditioning which is causing them some difficulty, you know, the relishing of Krishna's pastimes is for liberated souls, of course. But if there is some, if someone is feeling the effects of conditioned life to some degree or another, even as a devotee, you know, something is there, then, as the acharyas do, they allow us to rise above that conditioning in order to pave the way for us to then take shelter fully of Krishna and the holy name of Krishna without offence. So, you know, it has an effect on our consciousness, and at the same time, so if we read the pastimes of Lord Korma, it actually has a definite effect. It removes the, karmic reaction, and at the same time, it has an effect on our consciousness, which needed to be shifted. Our consciousness need to be shifted in a certain way or purified in order for us to chant Hare Krishna properly. Somehow we're chanting Hare Krishna, but we may not be chanting Hare Krishna properly. And sometimes by reading these various pastimes of these various incarnations and preliminary studies within the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's shifts our consciousness in such a way that we can actually associate with Krishna in the form of his holy name properly. And we were actually just studying yesterday in Bhakti Vai Bhava how Vidura Vidura was actually practically he associated with Krishna on many different occasions within the house of the Pandavas and at his own home. But there was always the itching agitation of being, associated with all the politics and diplomatic dealings in the association of the Kurus, Duryodhan and Dhritarashtra. You know, there's a lot of, because Duryodhan was acting basically under the influence of the external energy. And therefore, you know, there was this constant agitation or disturbance. So, in effect, when Vidura, eventually, when he was going to be physically beaten, if he wasn't, you know, immediately removed from the house of Dhritarashtra, he left voluntarily. But he didn't immediately go and take shelter of Krishna, which he could have, because Krishna was personally present. Because he felt that in order to take advantage, to be able to be fit to associate with Krishna, he first had to purify his consciousness so that he would be fit to be in the association of Krishna. And therefore he travelled actually for 30 to 35 years throughout the various holy places in order to purify his consciousness. And then of course he came across Uddhava, who added the final finishing touches, because through Uddhava he was able to hear a lot of the nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam from the mouth of, you know, such an exalted devotee. So in effect that purification brought him to the point where he was able to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from a devotee. And by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the devotee, he became fit to become to always remember Krishna, to chant and glorify him, and in that way associate with the Supreme Lord. So it's the same principle. And Vidura, you know, he was a very, very exalted personality. So just like we read about the pastimes of Korma, we see that, you know, what do we associate with it, you know, with a tortoise? What do? You know, they move very slowly, you know. Their four little feet. You know, even when they're, you know, they might poke their head out for a little look, you know, it's just very slowly, you know, just and the head comes out over the course of a few minutes. And they might walk along and they might stop for 10 minutes. You know, you don't see devotees doing that in the courtyard, right? They sort of, you know, they're on the way to Vishadam and they just come across down the steps and then stop in the courtyard for 10 minutes. Stop. Just think about things. Look around. You know, just, you know, it's just chung up them stairs. So, you know, the very nature of a tortoise, you're just thinking about that, meditating upon Lord Korma, and also the, you know, here we see that the tortoise is also a little bit thick-skinned. You know, we have to become a little bit, have it develop a little bit of an outer shell to not be so sensitive to the goings-on in the material world. And of course in the Bhagavad Gita we also see that in the second chapter, text 58 I think it is, that, you know, the devotee, if they're not using their senses in the service of the Lord, their mind or their senses, they will withdraw them. They don't just engage their senses frivolously. If there's, you know, they use their mind, their senses, their speech, just for the sake of service to Krishna. As the other day, I was sitting on the bench out there, and I had about 10 or 15 minutes to just go over some reading before my Bhakti Bhai Bhava class. So I really just wanted to sit there and just read. And there was a new person who was sitting beside me, and he was reading Science of Self-Realization. But anyway, every 10 seconds he turned around and just start talking about something, you know, just because for a lot of people they feel that if they don't just constantly talk, they're being antisocial. You know, that's the Western culture. So they'll just talk about anything. They feel that if, you know, for 2 minutes if there's no talking, that, you know, someone will think, well, something wrong with him. You know, it's like he's not talking, he's not being sociable. And, you know, what's wrong with him? You know, you got problems at home or something, you know. So no, it's like that. So they just feel, you know, or, you know, so they, if they're sitting there quietly, they think, or people will think there's something wrong with me. So, you know, he was just every 10 seconds. So I said to him that you may notice, you know, in this temple that you know, devotees they don't, that they use their tongues to talk only when they want to serve Krishna. He said, "Oh," you know, it was like, "Really?" And he was quite amazed at that. You know, he'd never heard that people do anything like that. And so I asked him what he was reading and what have you. He said, "Oh, I haven't got very far, you know." And So, you know, I encouraged him to read his book. Anyway, I said, yes, if you look around and you notice the devotees, you'll see that they do that. And he was quite fascinated. He was quite interested. I thought he might be a little bit disturbed that I was telling him to be quiet or something. But he actually was quite fascinated. And he said, oh, you know, that's interesting. You know. So then he actually sat and just quietly read his book. You know, and then I'd walk past, you know, after 10 minutes and I'd say, how are you going? He said, yeah, I'm up to this page, like that. So he was able to read. So in this way, you know, we understand from Lord Korma, you know, who appeared in the form of a tortoise, that there is something that we can learn from that behaviour of the tortoise. And we see in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that there's a Dattatreya, you know, the Avaduta, who had, I think it was 18 different gurus, you know, principal gurus, that from nature he would learn something, you know, from the bee he learned something, you know, from the tiger he learned something, from the crane he learned something, from the snake he learned something, even from the prostitute Pingala he learned something, you know, about, you know, disappointment. In this way, you know, the devotees, they learn. Of course, no one can be a better guru than Krishna himself, who appears in the form of the tortoise, just to show us that, you know, these are the most important things that you can learn from the tortoise. And I will demonstrate, I will show personally. So in this way, if a devotee, as we go through the Srimad Bhagavatam, it actually prepares our consciousness and helps us to control our mind and senses, that we're no longer disturbed by the itching sensations of the mind and the senses, and that gives us the ability to actually relish the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's described in the Skanda Purana that this is quoted in the Nectar Devotion, the one who constantly recites revealed scriptures, you know, what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam, as we will hear, is the topmost. That person becomes glorious in society. Ultimately, that person becomes worshipped by the demigods. So much so. You know, we see that many different stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam that if someone performs great austerities to control the mind and senses, sometimes the demigods, or Indra in particular, may try to, you know, disturb them. Some of the demigods, sometimes, not all of the time, but it has happened that they may become a little disturbed that if that person keeps controlling the mind and senses, they will gradually elevate to the position where they're eligible for my position as Indra. So that scares him. So, you know, they will agitate. So if one is actually able to control the mind and the senses and, you know, regularly, constantly hear the revealed scriptures dealing with bhakti yoga, the demigods actually will worship that person. It's very rare, very rare. And therefore you see that generally people don't do it. It's even difficult sometimes for devotees, you know. What to speak of someone who regularly, reads or studies, it's described that if someone, these are also verses from the Puranas, is quoted in the Nectar of Devotion, that if someone just has the Srimad Bhagavatam in their house, it's considered that that person, especially if they have that Srimad Bhagavatam in their house and they treat it respectfully, that person becomes completely free from all sinful reactions. Just having the Srimad Bhagavatam in your house, it frees one from the effects of karma, and becomes completely purified. And actually the Supreme Lord becomes very, very pleased with that person. So just having that book in one's house. At the same time, we can understand therefore that what to speak of a person who actually serves the Srimad Bhagavatam or takes advantage of the Srimad Bhagavatam which is in one's house. You know, that person becomes very, very exalted. So we can, you know, just like, for instance, if you went to someone's home and you said, you know, well, who's in this room? Oh, you know, that's the master bedroom. That's where we. Oh, who's this? Oh, this is the daughter. This is the son. Oh, who's in this room? Oh, Narayan's in that room. Oh, okay. But we never go in there. If Narayan, you would expect that if Narayan was in your home, residing there, that you would offer some, you would try to treat him as the Supreme Lord, just like we have the deities, So Srila Prabhupada taught us, well, the deities are non-different, and antalinga, they have the same unlimited potency as Krishna. They're residing here in your home, in this temple. And so he taught us, so you don't just neglect them. Every day, you serve them, So you see every day the devotees, they offer the beautiful garlands and dress and incense and, all the different cooking all day long. And so many different services, cleaning, from morning till night, devotees are exhausting themselves because they understand, yes, Lord Krishna is staying here. So in the same way, therefore, the devotees who take up that, they actually get the benefit of Krishna being here. So you can imagine if Srila Prabhupada installed Radha Vallabha and we have Gaurinatai, Jagannath Balaram, Subhadra and the Shalagrams, and we'd never come into the temple room. When people come to the temple, we do all sorts of things. They go, "Oh, who's in that? That's the Krishna's in there." But we don't go in there. We don't do anything. So then we're not taking the benefit, and no one else is getting the benefit. So that, the Supreme Lord is residing here, but in essence, no one is taking the benefit. So the same. If we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's considered, yes, well, Lord Narayan is residing there. But for those who take advantage of that, there are unlimited benefits to be derived. But ultimately, those benefits, they cannot be derived. Actually, even if one has the Srimad Bhagavatam, one cannot derive the benefits from the Srimad Bhagavatam unless one hears the Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. So, for instance, before I was a devotee, I had a relationship with this girl. She had the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, in her home. It was there for a long, long time. She never read it. She never looked at it. Although I lived with her, it was so inconspicuous in the shelf that I never even knew it was there. It was only actually after I broke up with her and she'd moved house. And then she put it on a different shelf. And I was at it was like a party, again, intoxicated. And I was very angry at myself for associating again with this same circle of people. And I thought, it's vantasi, it's like, I've already given this up, and now here I am back again. And I thought to myself, I don't want to know any of these people. They're basically all my friends. I don't really want to know any of these people. I don't want to take intoxication anymore. I don't want to, you know, do any of the things I'm doing in my life anymore. I remember one time I was really intoxicated, and I used to think I used to get all these great realizations, and I thought, boy, if I could only remember these great realizations I had when I was intoxicated. So one day I thought, what I'll do is I'll get really intoxicated and I'll write it down. So then I did that. I got super intoxicated and I wrote down my realization. But I didn't come across it for a couple of weeks or something. And then I opened the book and I thought, ah, I wrote it down. And what do you think it said? All it said was, I think I've made a mess of my life. That was all it said. It was my greatest realization. So anyway, I was actually thinking like that at that time, and I thought, I'm just going to reach into the library and pick out, you know, the biggest book I can find and sit here and just show these people I'm just bored with them and everything else. And I reached in, and of course I pulled out Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. It was just at hand's reach like this. So, and then I began to read it, even intoxicated, you know, and everything else. Then I went downstairs with the light, and I, you know, was struggling to focus my eyes on it. But even in the first few sentences, I could understand. I closed the book up, and I thought, oh, this is it. You know, this has got everything I've been looking for, like that. And I actually then I said to my ex-girlfriend, that you know, I'd like to borrow this book. She said, yeah, you can borrow that. You can have that if I can have your old diary. Because she wanted to see about the breakup and, you know, everything like that. And I said, yeah, take that. I'll take the Gita. So I used to carry it everywhere. So I gave her my diary. I took the Gita. Because I never used to write anything bad about anyone. So it was all just stories of getting intoxicated and travelling. So anyway, you can have it. There's nothing in there worth any value. So I took the Bhagavad Gita. But the thing is, the point is that even though the books are within one's home, unless someone takes advantage of it. So immediately I took advantage of that, and it just changed my life immediately, straight away. You know, just everything, you know, the way I thought about myself and my goals in life. And then I actually wanted to associate with devotees. And after reading the Bhagavad Gita, I actually wanted to read another book of Prabhupada's. And I remembered that my brother had a yoga book, a pink yoga book. And I said to him, you know, I remember once I asked him about this yoga book. He said, you won't be interested in that. Just, it's you know, it's nothing. And he put it in a box and put it under his bed, never to be seen again. But after I'd read the Bhagavad Gita, that pink book, this is, you know, so it's like there's a long time elapsed, you know, between him getting that book, might have been a year or so. And, you know, so I, after reading it, it just popped into my head, is that pink book another book by Prabhupada, like that? And I went to, you know, to our room, we used to live in the same room, and I searched all through the room and, you know, under the bed, you know, pulled out the box, and there it is. Turned over, there's the Nectar Devotion, on the back is a picture of Prabhupada. Oh, like this. So, again, you know, Lord Narayan is within the home, but, you know, we can keep him under the bed, and you get very little, you know, benefit. Very little benefit. But, you know, if you take him out and you actually read him. So then I actually used to go camping up at the Arthur's Seat, and I'd just take a thing of muesli and some water and some powdered milk, and I'd stay there in the forest for about 2 weeks, and I'd just read the Nectar Devotion. So I actually took advantage of it, you know. But you know, in essence, then of course meeting the devotees. I remember I said to Ramaswamy, when I met Ramaswamy, I said, I've read the Bhagavad Gita, and he said, Did you understand it? And, you know, I knew that I didn't really understand it, but I knew that I'd understand enough that I was standing in front of a mice from me. So that, you know, that was, to me, that was, you know, I've understood and that stood enough, here I am, you know. At that, I want to be a devotee. So, but no, I didn't really understand it. And so you really, you don't properly understand the books, but still, you know, any contact with the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam will have its effect, but you actually get the full benefit when you, you know, associate. Similarly, when Srila Prabhupada went to America, he stayed in the house of the Agarwals, you know, who appreciated, of course, that he was a very nice, saintly gentleman. But they probably weren't fully able to, you know, take advantage of his association. You could imagine if Srila Prabhupada had some of his Western disciples at that stage, and they also stayed there. And if that, you know, those Agarwals had have seen, you know, those disciples looking after Srila Prabhupada, you know, milking the nectar from his, you know, lotus lips like that, that they may have been able to take more advantage of Srila Prabhupada's association. So Srimad Bhagavatam is like that, that actually Srila Bhaktivinoda the course says that if you don't hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, basically you'll either get a negative effect or at best nothing. So, you know, he's quite strong in his words, you know. In other words, the books can sit in one's home, you know, for many, many years, and one may not take advantage of them at all. We used to give out books, of course. You know, now we're hesitant to give out books because, you know, people would throw them on the ground or, you know, throw them in the bins, what have you. And now we sell them, and at least they think, well, I bought it, you know, so I'll read it, something like that. But still, you know, unless they hear something from the devotees when they're, you know, buying that book, if the devotee tells them even a little bit, they'll get some appreciation, you know, how to relish those books. actually, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of rasa. That rasa is Krishna himself is actually the reservoir of rasa. So when one reads the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's actually tasting Krishna. But as we described, to come to that point is a very, very elevated platform, and therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam actually, you know, through hearing about the various incarnations such as Korma and Nisringa and getting their blessings, and the even hearing about the different kings and the Manus and what have you, it all gradually, what it does is the Srimad Bhagavatam has two types of rasa. One is the rasa which is directly tasted, and one, it is rasa, but it is leading you up to the full taste of rasa. So in other words, you're tasting the nectar of love of God, you know, that rasa from the very beginning, but it's increasingly bringing you to the point of tasting the full rasa. So there's those two different varieties of rasa within the Srimad Bhagavatam. And especially the pastimes of Krishna provide the, you know, summit of nectarian rasa. And there are two types of persons who can taste rasa. So there is the completely self-realized person, such as Shuma, you know, Srila Prabhupada, or, you know, the various you know, great devotees, the Rasika devotees. They can actually relish Srimad Bhagavatam. You see, you know, Rasika Nanda, that you know, even as a young boy, when you know, when he heard that Krishna left the gopis and went from Vrindavan to Mathura, he just became so overwhelmed with grief that Krishna's left the gopis. he didn't go back, and he went into the forest, and he cried and he cried, and he just wandered around the forest in just a state of absolute grief, like this. And they had to go and find him, and they actually one of the very elevated devotees, he understood some of the confidential shastras dealing, and he described, Krishna actually, he never really left them, he was there, and there's these pastimes, so he was somewhat consoled. But of course, we can just sort of read through it without very little effect. So there's those who directly taste the Srimad Bhagavatam, and those who, in one sense, they're tasting Srimad Bhagavatam because they're being asked to read Srimad Bhagavatam and try to taste the rasa, the spiritual nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the way that we taste Srimad Bhagavatam is by hearing from those who are directly tasting it. And then we take on their, what they're tasting, we sort of empathize, or, we feel some of that to some degree. just like, for instance, you see that even many disciples, they develop a relationship with the spiritual master, or some don't have a spiritual master, some are not initiated yet, but they want to understand, that nectar. There is actually a spiritual enjoyment, a spiritual bliss in that relationship with the spiritual master. So that can sometimes we can taste that by hearing about those who are, firmly situated in that relationship with their spiritual master. So either directly or indirectly, the Srila Prabhupada, sometimes when he would be asked about his spiritual master, he would say, "No, that is not for you." And from that you would understand, well, this is so sweet and confidential that he's not even going to, reveal any. So you can taste, well, what is that? You can taste it even in that. "No, this is not for you." "Ooh, what's that?" And then sometimes Srila Prabhupada would actually, especially on the appearance day or the disappearance day of his spiritual master, he would then describe the history of his service to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And very, very difficult. If you hear those tapes, Prabhupada struggles to keep his voice. It begins to break up, and towards, in some of those discussions, at the end, his voice just completely chokes up, and tears just flow from his eyes like that, just talking. So then we can get, oh yeah, I can taste that, So we can taste. So Srimad Bhagavatam is like that. In Prabhupada, in summarizing, how to relish Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, just hear it from the advanced devotees. If you hear it from the advanced devotees, you will taste something of Srimad Bhagavatam. And gradually, as you become more and more purified, you will directly taste Srimad Bhagavatam fully, also. Like that. So here, Suta Goswami is praying that may all the hearers of Srimad Bhagavatam, become purified by the grace of the Lord and his devotees, so that they can come to that position where they can appreciate the Srimad Bhagavatam. So is there any questions or comments? Well, he actually appears in every form. He appears in all the different species of life, and in all the different species of life,
the Lord reveals something more about his qualities. So actually, you know, the qualities of Krishna, he has 64 principal qualities, which can be sometimes broken down into other categories, but there are 64 principal qualities, and sometimes they're best understood, you know, one particular quality, one or two qualities, may be best understood when he does manifest a particular pastime, which is literally just to help people to taste that quality. See, so look, you know, therefore Krishna expands in all the different species of life, because each of those different species of life actually manifest a portion of Krishna's qualities. But we call him all attractive because all of those qualities are constantly manifest in Lord Sri Krishna, whereas in his incarnations, only some of his qualities are prominently manifest. So, Lord Korma, you know, he, of course, appeared because without his support, they were not able to support the Mandara hill, which had been tipped upside down, that they were using to churn the ocean, milk ocean. And as far as I understand, there is actually Lord Korma also exists somewhere at the bottom of the universe as a constant support as well.
The Lord comes to nectar for the devas or from the ocean?
Lord Korma, there were various incarnations of the Lord who manifested as a result of that pastime. It was quite an epic pastime within the history of the universe. And Lakshmi also appeared from that. So they took part in that pastime in order to manifest certain different qualities, and also took advantage of that pastime to make their appearance. Someone else had a question, is there?
What's the devotee's work at a job during the week? Is it okay to listen to Prabhupada's lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam? Is that, you know, qualifying the statement, hearing Prabhupada's song and association with Bhagavatam?
Yes, yeah, that's the essence of it, is that, you know, it's sometimes better to actually, you know, hear Srila Prabhupada speak Bhagavatam or, you know, one of his followers, than, you know, sometimes you derive more from that than the personal reading that we do. It's the essence because they're actually tasting the Srimad Bhagavatam properly, it carries over. We're able to taste it, you know, through them. Whereas sometimes when we're reading the Srimad Bhagavatam personally, you know, we may have a little more difficulty. You know, you see that you know, Srila Prabhupada's lectures, of course, you know, He would take generally just one verse, and in that one verse he would just really try to help people to taste the nectar of that verse, that, you know, whatever's being portrayed there. When we're reading, you know, Srila Prabhupada's, you know, if we're doing personal study and we may try to read several verses or a dozen different verses, we you know, we don't have the ability somehow or another to, you know, extract all that nectar, which, you know, may be there. You know, in hearing Srila Prabhupada's discussions, he sort of shows us the way of, absorbing ourselves in that nectar. When Srila Prabhupada gives a lecture or a discussion or a room conversation about a particular aspect of our philosophy, usually, you know, one particular verse, we learn a lot from him that, in essence, like, he's manifesting the devotees of the Lord, they possess all the qualities, most of the qualities of Krishna to some degree, to the degree the living entity has. So therefore the quality of Lord Korma is also there within Srila Prabhupada. He doesn't move very quickly through the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's like the tortoise, verse by verse. We were discussing the other day, it takes 18 years or something in Melbourne, to get through from first canto, 12th canto. And as an average. So, but that's the system Srila Prabhupada taught us, that, and you see when Srila Prabhupada discusses a verse, there's total absorption. There's nothing else going on, and Srila Prabhupada won't allow anything else. That verse is the focus of his attention, and that verse is the focus of everyone else's attention. Sometimes even if Srila Prabhupada would be telling a story, just like sometimes he told the story of again become a mouse. So it's a little humorous, the story about he wants to become a cat and then a dog and like that. When some of the devotees were laughing, Prabhupada said, "No, don't laugh," because he knows that you're going to lose your attention. Okay, it may be funny, but I don't want you to lose your attention. It's not that he wants them to be super serious, but he's maintaining just really focus on this verse. if a little baby cried, certainly there's some distraction for Srila Prabhupada, but worse is a distraction for everyone else. I mean, I know, because for my children, my children jump all over me, and I can sleep, and I can have three or four kids jump, and I'll just sleep soundly. But I notice for other people, a little child makes a little noise, everyone just looks, whatever's happening, the whole attention, and not for just that second. Then you find, you watch, 10 minutes later, they, the Bhagavatam class. So, Srila Prabhupada's teaching us, if you want to relish Srimad Bhagavatam, you really have to totally absorb yourself in that. And without any, of the, as Korma here is giving that benediction, when the senses and the mind are not distracting, then you're fit for spiritual life. So with each verse. And Srila Prabhupada is trying to make a... he has no other, purpose that, you wait till you see how much I know about Srimad Bhagavatam. I can tell you about 7th canto and 8th canto and 12th. No, just listen to this one verse, like that. There's so much nectar in this one verse. You don't have to go anywhere. Why? Krishna's in this verse. You go to the next verse, well, Krishna's here as well. Where do we have to go? Like that. So, Srila Prabhupada teaches us like that. And if we, you see also that if you look at Srila Prabhupada's lectures and his discussions, he may have discussed that verse in the course of his lifetime, 500 times. But in each and every time he reads that same verse and discusses it, it's the same fixed focus, and he's just going to give it his full time and attention. And because
the Srimad Bhagavatam, each verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna, because Krishna is absolute. Each part of his form, although we understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first cantos represent his feet, 10th canto represents his smiling face, but he's absolute. And therefore, devotees, even though they're tasting just one aspect of Krishna, they can taste the whole of Krishna, through that one verse, if they, able to take Srila Prabhupada's method, that Krishna is fully there. So therefore, Prabhupada would be able to expand that one verse unlimitedly. And, if Srila Prabhupada spoke on one verse every day for months and months and months, he wouldn't go off that topic, but he would expand it unlimitedly. And every day you'd see, realize Krishna. So, by hearing Srila Prabhupada, or various devotees who have that ability, then when we read Srimad Bhagavatam and we follow their methods, we're also able to derive nectar, the rasa, more and more, directly on our own. Yeah. So it's very, very important. And at the same time, there is a level of spiritual elevation that we may never hope to attain, even when we become spiritually perfect, because after all, Srila Prabhupada is an associate of Srimati Radharani. Lord Krishna himself, he finds it very difficult to understand, the nature of Srimati Radharani and her associates, and therefore he actually tries to take the mood of Radharani and appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to relish, what are the Radharani and these gopis, what is the nectar that I can't imagine. So, in one sense we learn how to taste rasa, and at the same time there is some rasa there that we can only ever experience by hearing from him, because he is on such a high elevated platform of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, so it's pretty nice.
When the student looks, sometimes you're ready to do it, but I already have books, but they haven't read it.
Yeah, Prabhupada wanted us to read the books ourselves and to be able to, relish reading his books. When that's there, then the devotee, they have that ability then to encourage others to relish. To the degree, book distribution was so successful because Srila Prabhupada relished Srimad Bhagavatam so much. So therefore, if someone heard from Srila Prabhupada, they were very eager, to purchase, and his disciples were very eager to distribute and what have you. So that, to that degree that we learn that art of relishing Srimad Bhagavatam, the association of Krishna through his books, to that degree, we actually have the ability to help others. That's why you're distributing books, and of course, people may wonder, how does he get that? How can you go out and distribute books? And you might want to encourage others, how can they go out and distribute books? So, sometimes the Sankirtan devotees will tell different Sankirtan stories. When you hear a Sankirtan story from a Sankirtan devotee, you think, I want to be a Sankirtan devotee. You can taste that relish. In the same way, someone who's relishing Srila Prabhupada's books, then they also, you know, they want to, yeah, I would like to, you know, relish Srila Prabhupada's work. I'll tell you the Sankirtan story. So we used to, I had the pleasure, of course, of doing Sankirtan. And we used to travel to practically every office, and we'd sit up and we'd have our meetings, you know, at the end of the week. There's Aniruddha, myself, Puri, and a few devotees. They would give us a map from the Malway, so we would photocopy that map. And when we'd been to every house, every office, you know, every single place on that map, then, you know, after so many months, then you get another map like that. And that's the way we used to, you know, do it. We had to do that. The reason we had to do that because, of course, you know, we were just covering so much space. So in order to work together, so we knew where we were and weren't, you know, crossing on each other's toes, but we actually, you know, our Sankirtan day, you know, we used to run. You know, you'd go into one shop and you'd come out, and without anyone looking, you'd run to the next shop, you know, like that. Because on the other side of the street, usually it was another Sankirtan devotee, and you could see that this Sankirtan devotee, he's already halfway up the street, and he's probably cleaning up. So you think, you know, so you go a little bit fast, and you sit, and then he looks at you and like this, because what happens, of course, the first one to the end of the street gets to cross over and come back down the other side, so you get, you know, more opportunity for that. So there's a lot of competition. So in order to do that, we used to have this map system. But we used to cover everything. And knowing that that was your spot, you know, you didn't want to miss even one single person. You know, so if you you know, we used to, when we'd go to the city, you know, so helping people to, you know, give some Lakshmi, to buy a book, to do whatever, you know, to somehow help the Christian movement. We used to go into, you know, every office. I think it's because of us that now they, you know, you can't get into any office in Australia. That's a fact. We did that, you know. You can't. Because, you know, we used to just, you'd sort of walk down the corridor and you'd see the receptionist at the end, and you try to look for a little door on the side, you know, you sort of come out the elevator and you got to, before the receptionist knows it, you somehow got to get into the office. You know, so we then, but we were very successful at it, and we'd just get into the office, and then, you know, there'd be about probably as many people as you've got here, they're all at their typewriters and, you know, whatever they're doing. And we'd either just, you know, put out a box of candles or, you know, some books or some singing cards or, you know, some incense or some paintings or something, and just invite the whole office to come and, you know, have a look. And, you know, first I'd be thinking, what the hell are you doing here? You know, it's like, how did you get in here, you know? And, you know, so they've all got these looks of amazement on their face. So yeah, it's actually very relishable for a Sankirtan devotee, because you see, you don't know how I got in here. I know I got in here by Lord Chaitanya's tricked you all. You know? Prabhupada wants, you know, his movement to expand. So Lord, I'm out here. I don't know what I'm doing. But Lord Chaitanya is making me do something. I don't even know how I'm doing it. So you're sort of looking, you know, how am I here? And then all these people, they're there. And then, you know, you've got these things which are probably not that sellable anyway. And you know, somehow or another, I'll take a couple like this, and you walk out of there, and then you go to the next place, and the whole time you've got the building security chasing you through the building, you know, and they're always one step behind you, you know, so you sort of, as soon as you finish there, you go to the next place, security comes in, where's that Hare Krishna, like that, you know, and then you go to the next place, and they chase you through the entire building. So, you know, for instance, we used to go to the city, and we'd go to every office in the city. There's very few that we didn't get into, every single office. And throughout the whole city, you've got building security and council security, chasing you through the city and what have you. And it's quite an exciting life. But, you're seeing that you're doing something which is impossible, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving you, he's so pleased that here is someone with no qualification, no ability, is just somehow trying to, spread Krishna consciousness, that he just gives his full mercy like that. And you're perceiving that presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore, Sankirtan has a particular relish that you don't get in many other services. There's something special about that, which Srila Prabhupada obviously knew, because he, Sankirtan all over the world, and he was relishing, in every country. They didn't want to let him in, but somehow he would get in there like that. So I remember one time, to give an example, sometimes you get this, sometimes Lord Chaitanya just gives you this massive realization, of his presence there on Sankirtan through something that happens. And one of my favorite events in the time that I was at Sankirtan was that we used to make these candles, and we used to, have you ever seen the Hawaiian candles? They've sort of got all different colors. So you have a block, candle block, and you dip it in blue and white, and then they carve them and twist them around like that, the Hawaiian candles. So we used to make them up in Port Melbourne. We had a big factory up there, the Hare Krishnas. A lot of devotees used to earn their money up there. And anyway, after so many years and years of selling these candles to everyone in Australia, we had this factory full of broken candles. Basically, if you took shells from here to the end, full, they were just full of broken candles. The arms had, snapped off, and, some were seriously chipped or dropped, and, some were broken in half. Some of the devotees, there were many, they actually tried to fix them, and they tried chipping away at them, and then they were going to re-dip them, and that didn't work. And some of them were just, just indescribable. Anyway, they said, "Who's going to sell these candles?" I said, "Oh, I'll sell them." Because, I had this plan, because when some of the people that were very, very difficult to sell to were some of the Greeks and Italians. I'm not being prejudiced, but the reason is because no matter what you were selling, they'll say, "Yes, I'll give you $5. That was, everyone, it's just without fail. You could be selling a painting for $300. "Oh, I like that. I'll give you $5. But the thing is, they wouldn't budge. They just wouldn't budge. "Give me $50, I'll sell it to you. I'm losing. I'll give you $5. So there were hundreds of them, mostly in a lot of the factories, and they worked together, like hundreds of them. So I had this plan, and I took out these broken candles, and I would go in and I would put out one good one. And then you would be surrounded by about 50, maybe a couple of hundred people sometimes. And you'd be waiting, and I'd say, "Oh, $20, I guess." And you would, "I'll give you $5. "Oh, no, I couldn't possibly take $5 for this beautiful. What if we all buy one?" "Oh, gee. Twist my arm." "All right." And they start grabbing, like this. And then you just bring the boxes. You got your assistant. They just run out of the car, just keep bringing the boxes. And the candles are getting worse and worse. No one's looking. They're just hands going into this table, $5, and things like that. And you just go to the next place, and the same thing. Anyway, we come to the last day, the last couple of hours of the marathon. And I had a couple of boxes. I don't think you could call them candles anymore. They were like bits of wax, well, you know, a lump of wax. And I'd exhausted my resources. Anyway, the only thing that was really open, because it is, you know, we get to Christmas Day, was an office, and they're having an office party. So these were, you know, like all dressed in suits and ties, very, very, you know, you know, sort of upper middle class people, you know, sort of people that usually don't buy a lump of wax or something like that. So I walked in and I said to them, you know, I'm selling these candles. And they sort of looked at me and they said, well, show us what you've got. And, you know, I'm trying to find something that, you know, is resembles something. And I just put that out and I'm thinking, oh, my God. So as a joke, you know, someone says, oh, you know, I'll buy it, you know, like that. So someone bought it. And then everyone in the office is thinking, well, you know, these must be something, you know, modern or, you know, something like this. So that, I'll get one. And so they all bought, right down to the last little clump of, you know, wax that I had there. I'm standing there with this big wad of money in my hands. And they're all standing there with these bits. And then they all looked at each other. And they looked at me. And they just thought, well, what happened here? But, you know, and I was just thinking, you know, Lord Chaitanya, you have just, you know, you have really done a number on these people. But you could see, it was just Lord Chaitanya, just, and they just, I never forget the look on their faces. Their jaws literally dropped, you know, and they're looking at each other, and they just could not believe that they had bought this, and I'm standing there laughing my head off with this big wad of money. I just walked out. I just couldn't say anything like that, you know. So, but, you know, there's a relish in doing Sankirtan, and there's a relish in, you know, reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And if somehow or another you develop, you know, to some degree, the tiniest little speck of a taste of that, you're able, you know, you can help others to also taste that. So, you know, similarly, I can see, you know, that you were tasting, you know, in the same way that I was tasting that day. Just by hearing, you can taste. So when we reach Srimad Bhagavatam, it's like that. You know, that if you hear from someone who can taste, you will also taste the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's, you know, especially we hear by Prabhupada and his gurus like that. Mm. All right, so leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.